Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
We have a historic rainy day fund balance.
What we could have done for broadband.
An $87.5 billion budget cleared both the Assembly and the Senate and is headed to the governor's desk. President Biden stopped in La Crosse to stump for a $1.2 trillion infrastructure package and some ice cream. Meanwhile, Governor Tony Evers vetoed GOP bills on elections and unemployment benefits. Is the budget next? Rewind, your week in review for July 2nd.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jason Stein.
Welcome to Rewind, your week in review for July 2nd. Jason, obviously the big news this week is the budget. The biggest news maybe of the year, the budget. About 4 months ago, we were talking the show about the governor proposing $1.6 billion in education funding increase. Now we're talking about the governor signing a budget with $3.4 billion in tax cuts to secure $2.3 billion in federal money. Am I oversimplifying the choice he has before him with his budget right now?
I mean, that's a big choice. So Republicans obviously want to take this windfall of unexpected tax collections and use it to do their main priority, which is lower the tax burden. And Tony Evers is an education governor, and he wants to, you know, use that money to increase ongoing spending for schools. But, you know, the choice he may be left with is, can he at least secure this federal money by signing the budget? Because if he vetoes the whole thing, then he leaves the possibility that schools are left with nothing at all. There's no compromise budget that ever happens.
Yeah, well, he'd have to get Republicans to come back and do a second budget, which is not going to happen. But let's kind of look at this budget first. We've got $87.5 billion in spending, $3.4 billion in tax cuts. There are increases for health care, increases for transportation. It's basically a skinny budget taking current law and adding more money into it where Republicans had priorities. What I really found interesting this week was the votes in the two houses, especially with the number of Democrats who voted for it. Assembly first, Reps Doyle, Andraca, Myers, and Ruwink all supported it. A couple of things to note about those folks. Doyle and Myers are both in seats that Donald Trump won. They are the definition of swing seat lawmakers. In the Senate, Buley, Path, and Smith. Of those three, Buley and Smith are both in Trump seats. And oh, by the way, Brad Path won by fewer than 600 votes out of 97,000 cast in the fall. Again, the definition of swing seats. Is that why they voted for this budget, Jason?
I mean, I think there's that. There's also, obviously, there's things that are positive in this budget. And the things that they don't like, there's at least the possibility that the governor partial vetoes those things, which we'll talk about later. I mean, I think, you know, some people might look at it and say, oh, a half dozen, a little more than that, bipartisan votes, what's the big deal in that? It is a pretty big deal because I think you go back to maybe 2007 to see a budget that had that sort of bipartisan buy-in within the legislature. It just doesn't happen anymore.
No, I mean, I've seen bipartisan opposition to budgets, but right. The last one that was bipartisan was 07, but that was a different dynamic, right? You had an assembly controlled by Republicans, you had a Senate controlled by Democrats, and a Democratic governor, Jim Doyle. The budget was pushed back until October. It wasn't going anywhere, and finally you had a group of minority Democrats and Republicans in the Assembly who banded together to pass a bill that got it out and through. Here you have a situation where you have unified control of the legislature, the Republicans, and they gave a Democrat their version with some Democratic support. So, I mean, for Republicans, you have to be able to tout this as a win. You got this Democratic support. One thing that's interesting is with the Dems who supported it, you know, Smith and Buehler up for election next fall. So are the four assembly members. We don't know what their districts will look like. We'll have redistricting probably through the courts right between now and next fall. But they're in a politically precarious situation. How do you say no to $3.4 billion in tax cuts? I mean, the ads write themselves, right? So I don't want to make it all about politics, but politics play a big role in what happens in that building.
Right.
So do you see the difficulty of voting against a budget with that kind of tax cuts when you're in a swing seat?
Well, right, and these are suburban or rural areas. And I think to some degree, as Democrats, they just have a little broader coalition. I mean, they're trying to get elected everywhere from urban areas into at least some areas that have some rural character to them. And I think, you know, what comes with that is maybe being a little bit broader or a little more out of step with one another as a party than Republicans are going to be, because they're in a little bit narrower set of places where they're going to be, you know, competing and winning.
Well, I mean, I talked to Janet Buley, who's also notably the minority leader in the state Senate. So I mean, you have a leader voting with Republicans on their version of the budget.
Which is very unusual.
Very unusual. And what she told me after was, quote, "I really believe in the governor's ability to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Some of us have to pay attention to our districts." Now, let's listen. I got some video here of some of the lawmakers from the debate. Let's hear their own words about why they voted for this budget and why they think it was positive, along with Evan Goyke saying why he didn't like the thing.
Outside of the tax policies in this budget, what is the best new idea from legislative Republicans? What's the most novel thing in this budget that Republicans in this body came up with? What is the problem that you're going to solve, the new challenge that you are rising to meet right now in this moment? Where are you taking us? What's your vision? You have defined success comparing yourselves to Tony Evers.
If I look at the fastest growing states, they are not the ones that have the fastest growing government. Look at the ones who just gained population. They have a legislature which is focused on giving people maximum freedom, not maximum government. And they also have the ability to look and say, how do we put together a government that provides the services that are required, but also does it in a way that is fiscally prudent?
Some of my colleagues fear that this is a harmful budget. I'm not sure that I think it's harmful. I just don't think it's helpful. But I have confidence that our governor is going to, again, exercise his veto pen and turn this into a budget that I think will be helpful to our state.
It feels like the gentleman from the 18th talked about that we don't get credit for this surplus. I'm fine with that, but you all don't either. This surplus was built by the people of Wisconsin, and that's why we're going to focus on sending a large part of that surplus back to those folks. The budget is reasonable, responsible, and realistic. Governor Evers, sign this budget.
We have the opportunity to provide transformational tax relief for the state of Wisconsin. The tax cut of lowering the third income tax rate by 1%, that is an average savings of $1,000 a year for the average family. That's the average, $1,000 a year. That's real money.
On the income tax break, people who make $24,000 a year are now in the same income tax bracket as people who make $263,000 a year. I would not call that very progressive. I would call that more of a flat tax. This budget is full of missed opportunities. It's baseball season, swing and a miss.
Now, Jason, one reason why I thought the votes were notable is because 2 years ago, every Democrat in the legislature voted against the budget, and Governor Evers signed it, used his partial veto pen to, quote unquote, make it better. But still, the fact that they had to vote against a budget, didn't have to, but they voted against a budget and then had to go out and tout because the governor signed it, from an awkward situation. So going into this past week, what I was watching for is how many Dems would get on that budget, because people told me that would be a sign, right, of what the governor might do. Well, you've got three Democrats in the Senate, four in the Assembly. Now, you can't do a bill passage and assume a veto override vote, right, because those things change. But you do have a veto-proof majority in the Senate that supported the budget. I mean, that's noteworthy to me. And I guess our next topic is, what will Tony do? And I guess what I'm wondering is, I'm queuing up, I get the impression he's going to sign it. What do you think he's going to do with his budget?
I mean, I think it comes down to, again, we have more than $2 billion in federal money that's at stake, because the state's got to meet a certain maintenance of effort requirement to get those funds. The budget is the way to do that. And so, you know, I think the governor's got to look and say, okay, what is the best scenario I can come up with? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he does have some ability. I mean, obviously there's more than $3 billion in tax cuts. Maybe he doesn't want all of them. Maybe he has some ability to remove some of those. So, you know, he has options. It's just that they're limited.
Yeah. So let's remind people at home. So maintenance of effort, that means the last two COVID-19 bills require states to maintain the share of spending on K-12 and higher ed to qualify for the federal money. It's around 35%, give or take a few percentage points. Fiscal Bureau did a memo this week that shows us that if the governor vetoed the budget and there's no new one in its place, we would fall short of that requirement. So basically what happened, if the governor vetoed the entire budget, he would not only be vetoing $3.4 billion in tax cuts, he'd also be threatening the federal money, because Republicans say, look, we passed a budget that we thought was great. He vetoed it. This is his problem. He's got to figure it out. So there's a political risk in doing that. Now, what I don't know is, where will he use a partial veto authority? To remind people at home, that authority is still the most powerful in the country, although not as powerful as it was when I first got here. He can write down a number. So if the legislature spends $500,000, he can cross it out and make it $250,000, as an example. What he can't, though, do is increase spending. He can't cross out $500,000 but $750,000. He can't strike out individual letters anymore. And he can't stitch together two parts of two sentences and make a new one. What we don't know is, after this last Supreme Court decision from last summer, what other lines does he have? Because that kind of nixed three vetoes, but didn't really give us a bright line. Can you explain that a little bit more, Jason, what happened last summer?
Yeah, I mean, I think what was difficult about last summer's decision in the Bartlett case is that there were really four vetoes that the governor made that would be very strange in any other state, but were pretty run-of-the-mill for budget partial vetoes in Wisconsin. Three of the four were struck down. The court had varying opinions with varying rationales, and there was no central, coherent, controlling majority opinion that just said that, you know, thou shalt and thou shalt not. This is what you can do, and this is what you can't do. And so, you know, I could see that sort of influencing the governor in two ways. I think because it's unclear, you know, how much he can get away with. In certain areas, he may veto a whole section because that seems to be the safest path for him, if there's something that he really wants to get out of there. In other areas, he may say, look, I don't know if it's going to hold up that I do this little veto here, this little word and this little word, and pull together this new phrase that is really not what the legislature intended, but I'm going to roll the dice because this is the only option I have here to get what I want. And maybe the court has turned over a little bit in the meantime, and maybe the court will let this one slide.
So you mean I might be looking at Supreme Court rulings next summer that will finally enter this budget and whether what he did was legal or not? Now, one thing I want to bring up is the tax cut. So the tax cut is the centerpiece of the Republican plan, really, with this $4.4 billion in extra revenue. It takes the third bracket from, I believe, 6.27% down to 5.3%. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I've asked a couple. I believe the governor could cross out the 5 or the 3 if he wanted to, but that would make the tax cut bigger. That would skew it more toward people who are making the higher end of that spectrum of the income. I don't get the impression he'd want to do that. I did get the impression, talking to people, that Republicans thought, at least some Republicans thought, they could go to the governor to veto on this tax cut, because there was a bill that Dale Cuyanga, member of the Finance Committee, had a few months ago that would have addressed the second bracket. So remember, we have four brackets in Wisconsin, right? Income tax that goes through each of those brackets. The second bracket, you want to do away with it, which would have benefited more people at the lower end of the income spectrum. They didn't do that. They picked that third bracket, which goes higher the income. I wonder if some Republicans thought they could go the governor into a veto of that because it pushed the envelope on what he would accept. I just don't get the impression, talking to people, he's going to veto that tax cut, because do you think, would it be risky, I guess, for him to veto a tax cut that big out of his reelection campaign?
I mean, there's any reelection campaign in Wisconsin statewide is fraught with risk because it's true. Such a 50-50 state. But I think, you know, look, I mean, it is not just a tax cut in the budget, it's tax cuts, right? Mm-hmm. So there's also property tax cuts in there, more than one. There's some cats and dogs. So, you know, he could go two paths. He could just say, you know what, I'm just going to sign my name to this whole thing and go out and run on it and see if I can't beat Republicans at their own game. Or he might say, look, I've still got a very significant amount of tax relief in this budget if I pull out this income tax cut. And so I'm going to roll the dice and I'm going to say, look, we got another year. That would remove for him this sort of sword of Damocles about the federal aid to schools. And then he might have the breathing room to go to Republicans and say, look, you guys really want a tax cut. You can still have it, but here's what I want it to be.
Yeah. Well, the impression I got this week was that Republicans get credit for boxing the governor in on this budget. There really isn't an avenue to veto it, because you add the tax cuts plus the maintenance of effort being met for the federal money. you really put him in a tough spot.
Yeah, to veto the whole thing.
Yes. Right. At the same time, you also give him potential for a huge political win ahead of a re-election campaign. Because, I mean, if you go back to last year, they approved income tax cuts in the last budget plus a trailer bill using increased sales tax from online sales to offset income taxes. He signed a tax cut in February. It was about $600 million. Most of that was the PPP loans, make sure they're they don't get taxed. Now you've got this. You're talking $4.5 billion in tax cuts he signed. Now, Republicans will say, hey, he also vetoed $2 billion. $1.1 of that was this property tax plan with the federal COVID money, which he was not a big fan of. But voters don't really see deep dives into budget documents or look at what could have been. They see, what's my tax bill? What's my property tax bill? What do I see in the 30-second TV ad that runs next fall? And Evers has a cleaner message, I think, on taxes. So there's a little bit of hit and a win for the governor, I think, if he signs his budget in whole. Though, again, I think we both agree he's going to change as much as he can to his liking. But
if he signs it, he'll certainly make partial vetoes. The question will be how many and which ones. But, I mean, you know, it's been typical for even Scott Walker. When Scott Walker was signing a budget passed by Republican lawmakers, it was still common for him to have dozens of partial vetoes.
So
you can expect some.
Absolutely. So let's shift to focus a little more national. So President Biden was in Wisconsin, second visit to Wisconsin since he became president. First one was Milwaukee for town hall meeting in February, and La Crosse to talk about infrastructure. Now, it was an interesting stop because it was announced last week, middle of the week, with an ag focus. Then, on Friday, they announced a framework for a bipartisan infrastructure package. So it changed to an infrastructure trip. But he's talking electric buses in La Crosse. Does that make a lot of sense to you, Jason?
I mean, it was interesting because the infrastructure bill has things like rural broadband. So he could have still went to a farm and talked about some of the things that are within the infrastructure bill if he wanted to sort of shift the subject matter a little bit. Obviously, he did an even bigger shift and went into the city of La Crosse and took some flack for that. At the same time, you know, I think sometimes we get, you know, people like us get wrapped up in these little things of, oh, did he, did
me?
He?
Me? No, never.
And you know, I wonder, though, you know, if you ask somebody about it, you know, this fall when the leaves are falling from the trees, if anybody would know what you were talking about.
No, I mean, the president came to town. That's the big deal, you know. Coverage, he gets that. And look, he also came to the quote-unquote right region in Wisconsin right now for him, right? I mean, it's a district that had traditionally been Democratic. Trump won it by a few points, 3 points in 16, less than 5 in 20. It's not a great sign for Democrats as part of the state. Ron Kind, if he runs again, will be a target. We don't know what this will look like after redistricting, but you need Western Wisconsin to perform better as a Democrat, and the president went to a place that could use a little help. So in that regard, it makes a lot of sense why he went there. The message maybe got a little bob a little bit. State Party Chair Andrew Hitt from Republicans, take a little knock him about what they decided to do. But still, anytime a president comes to Wisconsin, it's a big deal. I guess it would have maybe a little bit better if they talked more about ag. And that's really an issue they could have hit on a little bit more somehow in that visit to kind of pull it back to that. Where they're hurting the most is in rural Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, clearly for the Democratic Party. And obviously Ron Kind's seat is going to be critical to a party that wants to remain in control of the House of Representatives.
All right. Well, let's watch the president talk about his trip to in La Crosse.
I bet every one of you here can tell me what the most dangerous intersections in your town are. When you're teaching your kid to drive, what do? You tell them, no, don't go down that road. When you come home, I'm being deadly earnest. When you come home the other way. Well, guess what? We got an agreement to invest $11 billion to help cities and locales reduce crashes and fatalities in their communities, especially for cyclists and pedestrians, which are increasing significantly. This deal is going to more than double the funding directed to state and local programs that improve the safety of people and vehicles, including highway safety, truck safety, pipeline and hazard material safety. Studies show if you can get to your destination in the same amount of time or less on rail than you can by car, people will take rail. This deal also makes the largest investment of public transit in American history. A whole lot of people here in Wisconsin depend on public transportation, like the bus system here in La Crosse, to get to work, to school, to get around. Because of this deal, it'll be easier, quicker, cleaner, more frequent, and more reliable. More transit options mean more people can access good jobs as well. One study found that it leads to higher wages for workers because businesses can attract more customers with the rail. This bipartisan breakthrough is a great deal for the American people, not just for folks in cities, not just for red states or blue states, but for everybody. The human infrastructure is intertwined with our physical infrastructure. It's going to help us create more good jobs, ease the burden of working families, and strengthen our economy in the long run. And I'm going to be out there making the case for the American people until this job is done, until we bring this bipartisan deal home, until our human infrastructure also needs are met, until we have a fair tax system to pay for all of this.
All right, Jason, so we talked about what the governor might veto this budget. Let's talk about two vetoes he issued this week. One, AB 366. It would cut off enhanced UI benefits from the federal government, set to expire in September, I believe, as it is right now. The second, AB 173, would ban the use of private money to cover election costs. That really comes out of the fall when a group funded largely by Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder, pumped a bunch of money into Wisconsin cities to help cover election costs. I want to focus on the UI bill, really, sure, with you. There's a debate going on about whether the enhanced benefits are hurting our recovery from the pandemic. Right now, the maximum benefit in Wisconsin is $370 a week, I believe. The federal benefit is $300 on top of that, which Republicans point out to amounts to right around $16 an hour, which is a pretty decent starting wage a lot of places. Can you explain to me this debate about whether that is hurting us in terms of filling the open jobs in Wisconsin that we have?
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing to say is it's difficult to know because we don't get to run the counterfactual and see how we'd be doing if we had no benefits. And I think the other thing to know is that we had an unprecedented disruption in our economy through the pandemic. And so there's just going to be bumps in the road. Now, I mean, you know, the arguments on the two sides, there's clearly labor shortages for many employers or difficulty that many employers have in obtaining the workers they want at the salary that they want to pay them. And there's also on the other side, you know, there's still challenges for people in getting back to work, whether it's childcare or whether it's, you know, lingering health concerns that some people may have. So, I mean, there's sort of arguments on both sides. The administration can point to the fact that the unemployment rate is now very low, although that doesn't count people that are mm-hmm. out of the workforce. But they're also pointing to our labor force participation rate being higher than the nation's. Flip side of that is it's in Wisconsin, it's always higher than the nation. So that's not that's not shocking.
Yeah, the only thing, I have not seen any good polling on this. I know if it actually hurts the governor politically, if this argument, you know, sinks in. Let's be honest, Wisconsin Manufacturers of Commerce is not going to, they're not going to support Governor Evers' reelection next fall. A lot of these business groups are calling for an end to the benefit. They're not big fans of Democrats when it comes to election time. And there are people, the governor will argue, who are hurting, who are part of Moore's core constituency, that he thinks this helps. So I don't know politically how that issue really plays out, but I don't see him changing his mind that anytime soon. And oh, by the way, we've only got 2 months of it left, and we'll see then. I guess we could get a good idea then if there's a really big kick to the filling the jobs once it goes away.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, other thing I would say there is you see both Democrats and Republicans, not talking about health effects, but just talking about economics, saying, oh, the other party has done things that has just fundamentally damaged Wisconsin compared to other states. I mean, when you look at jobs, when you look at tax collections, things like that, there's not really a reason to think that Wisconsin has suffered in a way that is unique. In many ways, we've been better than neighboring states and the country. So obviously, this has been a tough time for everyone everywhere on the globe, but there's not really a strong argument, I think, for either side that their opposition has somehow fundamentally damaged the economy of the state more than, you know, other places in the country.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk pure politics. Jason with the WisPolitics.com stock picks. So rising this week, we have sports betting. If you weren't paying attention to the news, the Oneida Nation signed a new compact with a compact amendment, I should say, with Governor Evers, allow sports betting in Wisconsin for the first time. Now, has to be approved by the BIA before it takes effect. But what it will allow is betting on sports and other events, quote unquote. Now, as I understand it, what would happen is if this is approved, the tribe can come back to Wisconsin and say, okay, we want to have bets on the Academy Awards or on certain entertainment stuff, you know, things like that. But right now we know it will not cover elections, will not cover Wisconsin collegiate events or high school events. What I'm watching for is who goes next, because there's a called the Me Too clause in compacts where if one tribe gets something, other tribes can say, hey, we're interested, we want to work on a deal now to add this to our compact. I've heard about betting. I'm not going to say how much extensive experience I have with it, but I know that, like, there's not a huge margin on sports bets sometimes. We see stories all the time in Las Vegas of some big underdog came in and won on this bet, and the casino took a bath. So for smaller tribes, I'm not sure they're going to want to get into this because there's not the margin in case they have a bad bet. But I would expect to see the Potawatomi, some of the bigger tribes, the Ho-Chunk, getting into this before long, because if one tribe has it and it's successful, they're going to want to have it as well.
Yeah, and I think the one other thing to think about is the pandemic was extraordinarily harmful for tribal casinos, which have depended on, you know, in-person events with large numbers of people or in-person activity. And so it's not surprising that tribes would be looking for a way to sort of recoup some of what they've lost. And the flip side is, too, the state receives a decent share of that revenue. So it's something that's meaningful to every person in the state to watch.
Yeah. So next we have Ron Johnson. Look, the senator from Oshkosh has a kind of a pattern of saying something somewhat controversial that runs counter to the kind of conventional wisdom. Then there's this kind of big brouhaha over it, and we move on to the next one. What's interesting now is this week Ron Johnson had a news conference in Milwaukee with several people who said they've been impacted by the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, Johnson insisted at the start of the news conference he's not anti-vaccine, then proceeded to lay out for a good chunk of time reasons why people are saying this vaccine might not be great for you. It's an interesting juxtaposition of the guys always saying, I'm just asking questions, but then seems to raise questions that are maybe a little bit more like casting doubt. What's interesting about this now to people I talk to is there's also this brewing kind of fight between Johnson and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So he did a long takedown of Johnson and his position on scientific issues over the last couple of years, as in the paper this week. Ran editorial, basically he's unfit for office and shouldn't be the senator from Wisconsin. And I get the impression that Johnson likes it. Johnson has been railing against social media, against big technology, against, you know, people trying to cancel, quote unquote, others. Here's a way for him to use a foil. And we saw a fundraising letter from him earlier last month, I should say, in which he said, you know, the Journal Sentinel's out to get me, essentially. You should be giving to my campaign. It's a classic example of you have a media outlet saying, here's somebody who we think has got some problems, and that person turning around to say, yeah, but this is good for me. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things. Well, one, the Journal Sentinel is my former employer.
Yes,
I was never involved with editorials. The other thing that I would say is, you know, fundamentally, a lot of these things, I think, depend. We'll see if Ron Johnson even runs for re-election. But I think, you know, sometimes we just try and keep sight of the fundamentals, right? Which I think the fundamentals are we're trying as a state to get vaccinated, or at least many of us are trying, I think. And so I think, you know, that to me is the ultimate question is what impact does this have on that effort and on the sort of larger project of reopening our state and our economy? I mean, you know, right now it's hard to see something positive coming out of it, but, you know, sometimes these things are unexpected too.
And last, following election changes, so we mentioned the one bill the governor vetoed. I'll tell people at home, watch for more vetoes to come. This is not the last one that he's going to do. We're out of time. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jason Stein.
Thank you for watching Rewind, your week in review for July 2nd. Have a great holiday weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.